Hello, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, May 6th, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
Okay. Are you sure? Because, I mean, how do you know?
Because I looked on my birth certificate. That's how I know. So, holy cow, sex fans, it's National Masturbation Month. And I am proud to welcome back that international sensation, prolific author, esteemed educator and activist, Laura Antoniou, who I am certain will give us good cause to touch ourselves impurely. That's right, Laura's here as part of the Erotic Mind series and the Sex Education series, don't you know? But wait, you didn't miss part one of our chat, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 375, and presto. But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search.
I know, but, well, how do they establish that, sir?
Listen, it's my show, and this is how we do it here. Now, Laura will also read again from her work. This week, it's from a story titled Blame Spartacus. You'll find everything that you need to know about Laura on her site, cleverly named lantoniou.com. Of course, she's also on FetLife and Facebook, and don't miss her kick-ass Twitter feed. Look for all these links in today's podcast posting. Today, we welcome a brand spankin' new sponsor to our show. Join me in welcoming Libido Stack. Libido Stack is what we in the business lovingly call a boner pill. But Libido Stack is not just any old Viagra knockoff, no siree. It's a pure, all-natural, herbal formula that improves sexual health, combats erectile dysfunction, and increases the strength of your erection when aroused.
Sir, you have no call to get snippy with me. I'm just doing my job here.
What exactly is your job? Listen, I've tried Libido Stack, so I can testify to its effectiveness. In fact, you can see the review that a bunch of Dr. Dick review crew and I did of Libido Stack on my product review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. Simply use the site's search function in the header, type in Libido Stack, and you can read all our thoughts and comments. So why not get your wood the natural way? Look for their handsome banner in the sidebar of drdicksexadvice.com. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Laura, welcome back, and thank you again for joining us. I'm so delighted we have more time to be together. Last week was such a joy. I'm still kind of giggling inside, and our audience has really appreciated your forthrightness as well as your humor. So let's pick up.
I live to serve.
Oh, good, good, good. That's what I like to hear. So let's pick up where we left off. You were telling us last week near the end of the show about Christopher Morgan, who is one of your nom de smut personalities. So could we start today with a brief bio? Tell us some interesting things about yourself, where you were born and raised and schooled, and do you like muscle magazines and gladiator movies, and do you have a wife, a partner, a pet, that sort of stuff.
Okay, well, turning 50 this year.
Whoa.
I was born and raised in New York. I've never lived anywhere else. Never actually been tempted to live anywhere else, which is good, because I bought an apartment here now, so I'm kind of stuck. I'm a public school person. I never graduated college.
And, really?
I feel very intimidated by academics, even though I admire them very much. I quit school in order to get a real job.
Like writing smut.
for example.
Like writing smut, exactly. although, really, my first job outside of school was working at a bookstore.
Wow.
So there you go. Always with the books. I'm not so much into muscle magazines, but I am very into gladiator movies. In fact, I just wrote a story that I'll be reading from tomorrow night at the book launch for an anthology called Under Her Thumb,
wow,
edited by D.L. King, about dominant women.
Love and D.L., so, don't you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so I wrote a story called Blame Spartacus. And I actually have a bit from it, if you like to
hear
it.
Oh, please do.
Okay, because if gladiator movies, I was like, quick, open up the file. He's got to hear this. All right, so it's called Blame Spartacus, and this is the opening chunk. I see them all the time now. Blockbuster movies filled with preternaturally handsome 20-somethings masquerading as teenagers in some futuristic dystopia, or manly hunks in skimpy loincloths and sculpted armor hacking away in CGI-rendered stadiums on giant screens, or via my deluxe cable TV package. It's so very chic today to enjoy tales of epic personal battles for the pleasure of a bloodthirsty audience. This is quite an improvement from the period of time when the very phrase gladiator movie was a not-so-sly comedic reference to homoerotic diversions. Erotic, yes. And while I appreciate the fact that my gay male friends also enjoy the scenery, I am not a member of that team. I'm straight, if someone as kinky as I am can be called that, and I'm definitely a woman. I can show you proof, but only once the battle has been fought and won. I blame Spartacus. Specifically, I blame Kirk Douglas. Not that there's anything wrong with the current crop of Spartacani. They're all quite handsome and well worth the subscription to premium channels. But I can remember the exact instance I became alive and aware of my fascination with men who would combat for my pleasure.
Wow. Goodness. I love that. I absolutely love that.
Yeah. DL was thrilled when she got it. She started sending me, she was tweeting me with links to, look, Laura, it's a picture of someone, you know, wrestling.
She's a pervert. I love it. I love
just
it.
Just a bit of one, yes.
Yes. She was so great to be have her on my show. And that must have been like a couple years ago now. I love it. So, I noticed from your website that you are an observant Jew, at least when it comes to Passover. Are you also religious at other times of the year?
I'm a convert to Judaism.
Is that right?
Yes, it is, and so is my wife.
Oh.
We like to joke that we converted so we can marry each other, but but the fact is we actually started conversion at about the same time before we knew each other, living 3,000 miles away. So in Jewish parlance, it's beshert.
Uh-huh.
It was obviously meant to be. So yes, I do have a wife. I also have a daddy outside my marriage relationship. As far as my Jewish observance, we observe as far as we have found comfortable and appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
We find our Jewish identity is very important. It's important that we have and feel like we're in a Jewish household. We got married under the chuppah.
No kidding.
15 years this coming October.
Wow.
And we hope to renew our vows in Jerusalem, since we will be traveling there in the fall.
Holy mackerel, that is amazing. Gosh, good for
you. And yes, I have a cat. His name is Jasper, and he has his own profile on FetLife.
Everyone else does, including
right?
myself. So,
right.
I mean,
we also have a roommate.
They're letting anyone on there anymore, don't you know?
We also have a roommate. We share our home with Melina Williams, who is International Miss Leather a couple of years ago.
Oh. Yes, I've been trying to get her on my show, too. But
I can help
that. Oh, good. Oh, yay. So as you know, my primary reason for doing this series of interviews is to uncover something of the creative process. Are you living the life of a full-time sexual athlete? And if not, he says jokingly, if not, what sparks the images that become your stories?
Well, you know, some people I've met in the wider kinky scene will tell me that they discovered kink, usually on the internet, and one day they said, ooh, this is hot. And it's usually they've been an adult, they've had you know, a sexual identity way before that. That is not me. Okay? If you were to ask me what my core sexual orientation is, I'm a sadomasochist. Mm-hmm. And I know this because I was having fantasies of power, pain, bondage, all that sort of thing as a child. And when I say child, I'm not talking 14.
Yes.
I'm talking pre-literate.
Yes.
And so I have always had fantasies about this. When I'm not having sex, when I'm not in a relationship, I still have fantasies about this. And it is the only thing that will induce an orgasm.
No kidding.
Yep, 100%.
That's hardcore, don't you know?
Yeah, that's, well, in competitive douchebaggery, I win. Okay, I am just solely kinky. And so even when I had for many years undiagnosed depression, mm-hmm. My primary erotic focus has always been on continuing stories that happen in my head about power dynamics.
Wow.
And so so I do not need a spark. The spark is inside of me.
Right.
And it's like some sort of kinky pilot light. It's always on, waiting for me to turn the switch, and then poof, it comes up.
Wow. So wait until the Lilo people come out with that barbed wire sex toy. Oh, I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it. I've interviewed a number of people in my other one of my other series called Sex Edgeucation, and they've often said the same thing, that out of the womb, they were like kinky. I think I love that's amazing. So there you go.
And I think, oddly enough, something told me very early on that you should not share these ideas and stories with other people.
Right.
And I don't know where I got that message.
Right.
But as a child, I hid what I was doing and continued to do so until, one day I discovered that there was a actual kinky scene and I just burst out looking for them immediately.
Yes. One of my recent interviews was with an illustrator from the UK. He goes by the name Alexander, and he did the same thing as a kid. Would be doing all of this really erotic imagery, and he would destroy them, shortly thereafter because he didn't want to be found out. Imagine how much stuff we've lost because of that.
I burnt a whole stack of stories once when I left home.
Do you have a writing ritual?
Oh, yeah. First, I strip naked on my body.
That's what I thought.
In leather strap. I sacrifice a computer mouse, and I chant, "Think, Laura, think." And then I stab myself, drip blood all over the keyboard, and then,
That's what I do, too.
Yeah, right?
Except I call myself Richard instead of Laura, but other than that, it's perfectly the same, don't you know?
Yeah, that's about the size. My writing ritual is to make a pot of coffee and sit down and get off the fucking internet.
Yes. Well, there you go. So let's talk about your latest book, The Killer Wore Leather. I'm absolutely enjoying it. I love the characters, the particular ones, the boys, Jack.
The boys, Jack. everyone loves the boys, Jack.
They're so adorable. And the lesbian homicide detective. I love it.
Detective Rebecca Feldblum.
So are these characters based on real people or... amalgams, as it were?
Any resemblance to real people, living or dead, is purely coincidental, and no furries were harmed in the making of this book. That's my story, and I'm sticking to
good
it.
Good for you. There's some wisdom in that, don't you know? Because if the word got out, holy cow. And you skewer all the subcultures of the subculture. And I absolutely love it. And we talked about this briefly last week about, your capacity to call the community out on itself. And I love it. I absolutely love it. And you do it in such a loving sort of way. But well, you know that you've got a point of view.
I think that's why I get away with it.
I see.
Because if you... Once I met a gentleman who had come to one of my speeches. I do keynote speeches at kinky conferences all the time.
Yes.
And he had come under protest because he had read my previous speeches off my website and he had decided I was just an angry lesbian. Mm-hmm. And I was mean to people.
Mm-hmm.
But when he heard me actually give the speech in person, then he could hear and see the affection and love I actually have for the alt sex community.
Yes.
And several reviewers have noted that they can see that in the Killer War Leather, which is good, because otherwise, if you take it too seriously, you're just not going to have a good time.
Well, that's the point. And this is what I wanted to talk to you about, is that, you know, it's so amazing that you're able to have, you know, poke fun and have this wonderful, droll sense of humor about it all, and actually welcome. And I'm thinking that anybody could pick this book up. I mean, even somebody who is not the least bit knowledgeable about the gay leather contest scene, and find it enjoyable and charming and funny, and also get a really clear sense about what goes on at an event.
Well, that's what I'm certainly hoping. I mean, I provided the readers with two point of character, a point of point of vision characters who will conduct the, as you know, Bob, conversations. Right? I mean, that's a thing.
Yes.
Right? Because you may not know what they're doing and why and that sort of thing. And so I have the detective and I have a reporter
right.
on the scene to ask these characters
the Greek chorus.
What the hell is going on here? And sometimes the answers they get back just confuse the issue more, but that's life, isn't it?
It is.
I certainly hope that that I'll get a decent crossover readership here. One thing for sure, gay men have been buying this like crazy.
And rightfully so, because it is absolutely wonderful. So
I understand that the book club of the Leathermen's discussion group in San Francisco spent like an hour trying to figure out who the characters were based on.
Well, that gave them something to do, huh?
Yes. I can't wait till I go speak to them, which I'm doing in 2 weeks.
Oh, there you go. So this is your first murder mystery? And
yes.
So how did you happen upon this genre?
Well, I read a lot of murder mysteries.
Oh, good.
And not a lot. I read a few authors of murder mysteries and will pick up their new books as soon as I see them. But the concept of the book was actually based on a mystery called Bimbos of the Death Sun, which was written by Sharon McCrum, came out in the late 80s, early 90s, I think. And it was a comedy murder mystery set at a science fiction convention.
Oh, I see.
And she skewered the world of small, local conventions of gaming and science fiction and fantasy and killed off what many people think of as a thinly veiled Harlan Ellison.
Uh-huh.
And I read it when it came out. I thought it was hysterical. And it remains a book that I reread every once in a while just for joy. And let me tell you, it's not very long. If it's 198 pages, I might be exaggerating. Mm-hmm. But the idea of doing something like that for the kink leather scene has been in the back of my mind for years. I just didn't know who would publish it.
Right. Interesting. Well, you know, it's clear that, you know, like the murder mystery angle has been done before in terms of gay leather and stuff like that, like think of Al Pacino's movie Cruising, but the comedy angle, I mean, that's what really sets this book apart, and I find it just absolutely refreshing, absolutely refreshing.
Well, and also you get tired of having books about your community written by people outside of your community.
Right, right.
You know, that there have been murder mysteries that sort of touch on consensual BDSM behavior, but most of them are written by people who have no experience in the scene. They do cursory, if any, research whatsoever, and the murderer always turns out to be someone who's in the scene and who is using BDSM behavior to kill people.
Right.
And it gets annoying after a while.
You make that point with your reporter character, because she's having to defend herself all the time that I'm not going to, this is not a rip-off, I'm not coming here just to see how weird and twisted people can get, and I'm going to do a snarky, you know, column about that or a snarky article about that in the paper. So, I mean, people in the alt community are very sensitive to that because, you know, we have been ripped off a lot.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I was actually plagiarized by a guy who took a chunk out of my novel, The Slave, and put it in what he said was a nonfiction depiction of real-life contemporary slavery. Just plopped it into a story about a woman, a Filipina, being held against her will in Kuwait.
My goodness.
And one of my readers found it and wrote to me and said, isn't this, like, from your book, The Slave? I was like, oh, thanks, dude.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Oh, it is. It's really tragic. So your work, as we talked about briefly last week, is known for breaking ground by including characters of all different ages and sexual identities, body types, and gender. I applaud you for that, and after a while, one gets really tired of the perfect specimens that populate the bulk of erotica of any genre. I mean, just look at the covers for most erotica. I mean, where are all the fats and femmes and people of color? And
well,
oldsters.
The conventional wisdom of covers is that a skinny, pale people sell, and
that
anything
right?
that's not doesn't.
Wow.
And they will give you numbers on things. They'll say, see, we released this book with, you know, a skinny white person on the cover, and it sold 30,000 copies, and then we actually put a black person on the cover of the same book, and it didn't sell, you know, 12,000.
That just breaks my heart.
And I get it all the time, and it was one of the reasons why I particularly wanted Melina Williams
right.
on the cover of No Safe Words, which is the Marketplace fan fiction anthology, mm-hmm. because she's a woman of color, and because she is a curvaceous woman of color. And sure enough, she gave me
a knockout, I might add.
And she's a knockout. And she gave me these delightful pictures of her starkers naked. And I sent them to the publisher of the Marketplace book, Cecilia Tan, who was singing praises. She said, thank God, you know, something that's not typical. And
right.
she was thrilled to be able to put them on the cover.
Right.
But we'll see a year from now how the
yes.
sales go.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about fan fiction. You have this new anthology coming out, No Safe Words, which is fan fiction of the Marketplace series. So tell us more.
Well, I've actually always written fan fiction. I just didn't know it. Fan fiction, for those people might not know, is when a writer takes an established group of characters or situation and writes their own story based on it. And modern fan fiction all traces back to Star Trek fiction. Written in the 60s by and 70s until today, frustrated fans who, when the series was canceled, created reams and reams of their own stories, entire novels and
right.
series of novels containing Star Trek characters. Now, I used to not particularly think highly of fan fiction writers until I came to the realization that I was one.
Mm-hmm.
Because somewhere along the line, I had associated fan fiction with just copying what's out there.
Right.
But in actuality, what you're doing is you're using an established universe in order to stretch your writing muscles.
Right.
And remember, I told you that my kink influence goes back to childhood. Well, the first writing influence I had was a scholastic book titled Greek Slave Boy.
Wow.
Right, by an author named Lillian Carroll. It was published in 1968, so I was 4 when it was published. So I probably didn't read it until I was about 6. Okay?
Wow.
Reading it, though, was a breakthrough moment for me, because I'm reading this story about an Athenian boy who winds up being sold as a slave and getting some sort of charge out of it. Can't really describe what it is, but even as a child, this story resonated with me. And I didn't have the chops to start writing yet, but I started making up my own stories in my head about being a Greek slave. Later on, when I was writing, I started writing vampire stories.
Oh.
Okay? Inspired by Dracula.
Right.
And even more than Dracula the book, the Hammer films.
Mm-hmm.
Starring Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. And Tomb of Dracula, which was a Marvel comic book. And I would write my own vampire stories. And then came my later adulthood, or my teenage years, when I started reading smut. And I read John Preston, and I read Anne Rice, and I read a lot of really, really, really bad porn. I read a lot of Victorian porn, and then I started writing my own. So really, my whole life I've been writing fan fiction, because it's based on other
right.
fiction that's
And that's
out
just
there.
Being honest, is it not?
Yeah.
I mean, and people who say, you know, they're, you know, plowing new ground, possibly are not.
There are just so many stories.
Exactly the point.
Okay, so I decided to open up my world of the marketplace, and I invited fans to write their own stories, and they did, and it's just a marvelous collection, and I'm really hoping it sells enough that I can do one, say, every other year.
Because there's that much out there. I mean, it's classic. I mean, your work is a cult classic. I mean, and everybody says that about that. So apparently, people are, you know, getting on the bus and, you know, writing, you know, what happens next, at least from their point of view.
Right. In fact, someone who was kind of nervous about submitting a story to me actually went and wrote it anyway, and I read it, and I wrote back to her. I said, this is fabulous. I totally would have bought this. If I get to do another one, you're going to be the lead story in it.
Wow. That's
so
amazing.
So yeah, I think there's a market for that.
And it's an honor. You know, I mean, I suppose once you get over the fact that, you know, this perhaps a sensibility that, you know, people are just trying to, you know, capitalize on my success, but you know, it's an honor, it seems to me, that people would think so highly of you that they and your work that they would want to perpetuate it, at least for their own sake.
It is, and it is my honor to be able to give them a forum to publish it in. I was thrilled.
I'd like to talk briefly about your activism. You are a highly sought-after teacher, presenter, and speaker in the area of queer, kink, and BDSM. And since it appears that more and more of this stuff is going mainstream, do you see any dangers in that?
Nah.
So nah, you don't see that there's a price to be paid for the fringe being co-opted?
You know, I don't think we're actually being co-opted.
Okay, good, good, good.
I think that there's a certain percentage of people for whom kink is a central identity or a really important one. They're going to find us one way or the other,
uh-huh.
At least in the Western world, when they have the leisure to do so. And there are people who are mildly titillated by this sort of thing, and they will never look for us. They don't want to, don't need to, don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like, we all know what this is referring to. It's those books. It's 50 Shades of Holy Crap, which is the title of my parody, 50 Shades of Grey. You know, if a billion people buy those books in all languages, you know, not 100,000 of them are going to do more than go out to a sex shop and buy a set of Benoit balls for
right.
home and find out that they don't work that way.
Right. That's so true.
That they're not interested in being kinky. They're interested in being titillated.
Right.
And that's as far as they'll go. And they're not going to bother me. And they're probably not going to read many of my books. However, I'm very thankful if they read any of them. And every 10 years, the media discovers kinky sex.
It's so true.
Right? I was there for Exit to Eden. I was there for 9.5 weeks, for Alyssa Wald's far superior Meeting the Master, and it comes and goes, and every time we're amazed.
Astonished, really.
Astonished that there are kinky people out there, and that women can
Mind
be kinky.
Mind you, absolutely.
And then we get a psychiatrist to show up on a TV show and sit there and look very serious, usually a guy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he'll say, it's perfectly normal and natural for women to have submissive fantasies and has nothing to do with feminism. And then 10 blonde bimbos on TV will say, is feminism dead if you want to be whipped? Coming up next on Fox, you know?
It's so true. I mean, how trite is that after all? I mean, that's even more trite than 50 Shades of Grey, if you ask me.
And yet, they do it over and over and over again as though it didn't happen 10 years ago.
Right.
And so now, having lived through this multiple times, I'm over it.
Yes.
So the only difference right now is ebooks.
Right.
And the fact that millions of people can now read this stuff in private. They don't have to worry about it being on the shelf and having their mother or their child see it.
Right.
And that's why it sells fast, and it gets hidden away, and it gets forgotten by the next big whatever.
Right.
A lot of people have asked me, have my books sold more since 50 Shades of Grey? Probably.
Yeah.
Why? Because people are looking for terms like BDSM
right.
and kinky.
Right.
And sooner or later, you're going to find my books. Whether they buy more than one...
It's the antidote, if you ask me.
Well, that's the thing. I've also gotten some really negative reviews since then. Why? Because it's not 50 Shades of Grey.
Right.
It's not a billionaire bondage romance about a 21-year-old naif and exciting adventures in black helicopters.
That's true.
My books are not romance.
Yeah.
And
no bodice
I'm
ripping.
Okay with that. Or bodice rippers. And you know what? My agent begged me to write 50 Shades of Gay, which, by the way, is a book now. All right, so obviously someone else jumped on that.
Right.
But every time I tried to think of what I would write, I can't write from the perspective of an empty-headed virgin.
Right. Thank God.
I can't do it.
Thank you, Lord.
The closest thing I ever got to that was Musclebound, and the book is packed full of non-consensual gay male sex, and so there you go.
Yes. So listen, there's another issue that I hear about all the time on the sexual fringe that... It has, our community has severely splintered into smaller and smaller special interest groups. And thanks to the internet, that one could actually live a really kinky life without ever connecting with anyone outside of the group who shares that person's sexual proclivities. Are you seeing that too? And if so, is the community the poor for it?
Yes, I am seeing it. I call it the balkanization of kink.
Right.
And yes, I do believe the wider community is poorer for it. Back when opportunities to socialize in large groups were much more limited, when there were only a few conferences a year where you could go away for a weekend and be surrounded by kinky people, you would be rubbing shoulders with all sorts of kink.
Right.
Now, it's still true that you can. However, instead of gathering, 500 people with 80 different kinks represented, you can gather 500 people with one.
It's true.
Kink. And while it's very nice, it's always nice to have your own treehouse, okay, with the no girls allowed sign hammered on the outside. I think that what that does is it narrows your field of vision, and it narrows your opportunities for socialization.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we
and
are...
And learning about stuff.
Yeah, and we're far richer when we have a wider variety of people that we socialize with. Chip Delaney wrote a book called Times Square Red, Times Square Blue, about the changing of Times Square from the porn capital of the world to Disney.
Right.
And in it, he says that porn is one of the places where men, and mostly men, could communicate and socialize across class divides.
Right.
You could go to a porn theater and be sitting next, you know, in between a millionaire and a dock worker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a homeless guy and a mayoral candidate.
Literally.
Right? And everyone will be helping each other out, so to speak. Losing those spaces inside, you know, an urban setting for him is the loss of the potential for people to meet who would never otherwise meet. Now, as a woman, I'm not so much comfortable in, you know, a porn theater surrounded by men. But when I went out in the company of other perverts, oddly enough, united by our interests in power exchange, in sadomasochism, in bondage, et cetera, I could meet people whose sexual tastes I'm not interested in, yet who spark a recognition in me that, well, that will ignite that pilot light that's always
right.
on.
Right.
You know, I'm not so much into pony play, but dedicated pony players can get an erotic response from me.
Right.
And but not if I can't see them.
You make that very clear in your latest novel, The Killer Wore Leather, because there is a subsection, and you write about this, about some of the characters are, you know, furious that, you know, straight folks and furries and, you know, all these other characters are contaminating the gay leather scene, and you refute that, not as a non-fictional writer would do in an exposé, but very subversively and happily so, as a fictional writer, and I'm eternally grateful for you doing that.
Well, you'll notice I kill off the character who has the most...
That was mean.
Most negative response.
That was mean, I have to say. Holy cow, that was mean. But good for you, because he deserved it, don't you know? Anyhow, I'm looking at my clock, and I know that we're way over time. And
already, look at that.
I know, and I've taken so much of your time, and I'm eternally grateful. This has been so wonderful. I'm sorry that I waited so long to contact you, and maybe there'll be opportunities in the future to talk some more. It's so grand getting to know you. Could you give us your website address, walk us around, tell us where we can find your books and buy them, and then we will let you go.
Sure. My website address is lantoniou.com, lantoniou.com. I'm also on FetLife, Facebook, and Twitter. Laura Antoniou is my real name. If you Google me, you'll find me all over the place.
Cool beans. And we can buy your work through your website, I'm guessing?
There are links on my website, but most of my books are also available through Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, you know, the usual places, Powell's.
Great.
All over the world is ebooks.
Great, great, great. Thank you again. It's been a joy. I look forward to other opportunities. And until we speak again, we will be visiting you in cyberspace.
Thanks a lot,
Thanks,
Richard.
Laura. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Pretty delightful show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Listen, we're going to take a couple weeks off from podcasting as of today. We haven't had a break since the new year. And when I return, I will feature a long-awaited Q&A show and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
Shut the fuck up, or I'll throw you back into the trunk, you know.
Oh no, anything but the trunk. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Libido Stack. I know what you're thinking. With so many herbal supplements on the market that boast fast-acting results, it's hard to know which erection-enhancing formula to choose, or if one shouldn't just avoid them altogether. I always tell my clients to beware of bogus claims and dangerously adulterated products that abound in the marketplace. Libido Stack is different. It is made of 100% herbal extracts. It's as effective as any medically prescribed drugs I've tested, but it's much kinder to my system. There are no headaches, unsightly flushes, upset stomach, or rise in blood pressure, or altered vision. As you know, every human body is unique, and each of us metabolizes what we consume in a slightly different way. So keep this in mind when you use LibidoStack. And just so that we're clear, LibidoStack is not miraculous. It will not override an unhealthy lifestyle. But it can positively affect our sexual response cycle, making us more easily aroused as well as more energetic lovers. Look for the LibidoStack banner in the sidebar of my site, drdicksexadvice.com. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.